talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. You're with Steve Malzberg on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard. Steve Malzberg with you. It is 10:04 p.m. on Wednesday night here on the East Coast of the United States. And you know what day and time it is wherever you are listening to the Steve Malzberg Show on TNT Radio. Welcome aboard. We have all kinds of news today regarding the shooting in Nashville, and also the grand jury that convened in Manhattan and involving Donald Trump and the alleged payment to Stormy Daniels to allegedly keep her quiet. We'll update you on all of that a little bit later in the show. Also, you heard some of the exchange between Senator Ted Cruz and Homeland Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, and let me tell you, that confrontation, that 10-minute confrontation, was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen, and I'll tell you why, and you'll hear why a little later on also, if we have time to get to that one. But let me just start here kind of at the end, and then we'll work our way back, and we'll get to our guests to do that. President Biden today said, like many strong supporters of Israel, I'm very concerned. I'm concerned that they get this straight. They cannot continue down this road. And he said that Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, will not be invited to the White House in the near term. And Benjamin Netanyahu, very late Israeli time, 1 a.m, responded in English. She issued a statement, and he said basically that Israel is a sovereign country which makes its decisions by the will of its people and not based on pressures from abroad, including from the best of friends. So what is that all about? Let's welcome in and welcome back to the show Jonathan Tobin. He's the editor-in-chief of JNS.org, senior contributor for The Federalist. You could also read him in The New York Post and Newsweek. And Jonathan, welcome back, my friend.
Great to be with you, Steve. Thanks for having me.
It's always my pleasure. And I wanted to get to this a lot sooner, but with all the other breaking news. But, you know, having waited, we land on the day where there is at least kind of a verbal exchange of statements between Biden and Netanyahu, not lower level people, which we've seen already happening. This all goes to the judicial reform, I believe, and I know it goes prior to the judicial reform. A lot of people would like to say that's what it's all about right now. The recent protests in Israel and the proposal that Netanyahu's goal to give the judiciary a little less power. But look, this is the second Netanyahu was elected, and before people in the administration here were speaking out that it would be unacceptable, and we don't like who's in the cabinet, and we don't like this, and we don't like that. So tell me if I'm right and where we are.
Well, Steve, there are kind of two different things going on here in this story. One is the battle over judicial reform in Israel, in which the opponents seemed, at least for the moment, to have won. Now, if you've been following that debate in most of the corporate liberal media, you think that what Netanyahu and his government are trying to do is institute dictatorship and overthrow democracy, and that the demonstrators are, you know, been pushing to defend their democracy. And this line has been echoed by the Biden administration. And it's complete gaslight. I mean, it's absolute nonsense. What they want is to preserve basically an out-of-control a Supreme Court in Israel and judiciary that has no checks on it. They're not defending checks and balances in Israel's constitutional system. They want no checks and balances on a left-wing court that has no bounds on its power, can actually almost name its successor, so there's no way to change it, and has enormous influence to even rule constitutional provisions unconstitutional, which is basically insane. What they want, why they want to preserve this is because the court is left-wing, and the left in Israel seems to have trouble winning elections. And they just had an election in Israel in November. And what this mass resistance was sort of a resistance coup aimed at toppling Netanyahu. Now, Biden's interest here is not in preserving Israel, you know, Israeli democracy. You know,
Iran, right? It's Iran, as you wrote in a brilliant column the other day. Yeah.
Right. Because all the things he claims that Netanyahu is doing are things that Biden does in spades, you know, governing by executive order, running roughshod over the Constitution, trying to push things through without consensus. I mean, it's all hypocritical nonsense. But what this administration, which is packed with alumni from the Obama administration like Biden, what they want is to get rid of Netanyahu and replace him with an Israeli prime minister who will be more pliable and will not cause trouble about their efforts to appease nuclear Iran. And because just last week, the latest evidence is that the chief of staff of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Mark Milley, said that basically the United States is prepared to tolerate a nuclear Iran as long as they don't flaunt nuclear weapons. I mean, that's an existential threat to Israel as well as the West. And, you know, Netanyahu can be counted on whether you like him or don't like him. He's not going to put up with this. He's going to fight this. He's going to use whatever he can in terms of Israel's armed forces, rallying allies to stop this existential threat. This terrible danger that has been created by Obama administration appeasement, continued by Biden administration appeasement. So when you hear Biden, you know, chirping at Netanyahu and opposing, you know, his government's measures in ways that are really almost unprecedented. You know, we Americans go nuts. Our hair goes on fire when we think of somebody interfering in our domestic affairs. They're openly intervening in domestic affairs in Israel, and it has nothing even to do with foreign policy. It's a domestic dispute. What they want to do is get rid of Netanyahu.
Absolutely. Now, you also wrote a piece the other day, a resistance coup just defeated Israeli democracy. And you were talking about Netanyahu caving to the protesters. I mean, now tell me how much influence from outside of the country, maybe places like the U.S. and groups that are centered in the U.S., do you believe had a hand in orchestrating all that we saw, the labor unions striking, the universities shutting down? I don't know how they would have influenced reservists saying they weren't going to participate in the military. But how much of an influence do you believe came from left-wing groups, from within the United States and certainly from without, from the outside of Israel itself?
Well, certainly the resistance in Israel was encouraged, aided, in some cases probably financially a bit, by American help. But I think, you know, this was an Israeli dispute. Biden didn't do this. Biden couldn't orchestrate this. Even left-wing American Jews couldn't do it. What's at stake in the battle in Israel is about who runs the country and the establishment. And this is something that, you know, no matter where you live, you understand that there's kind of a liberal elite establishment. We have it in the United States. In Israel, it's deeply entrenched in, the business world, academia, the media, which is as left-wing in Israel as it is here in the United States or elsewhere, culture, the whole bit. And the side that they back in politics, you know, just doesn't seem to be able to win elections there anymore. And they were decisively defeated in November. But the one, you know, the ace in the hole that they have is that the Israeli Supreme Court maintains, you know, has given to itself. And it started in the 1990s. This doesn't go back to Israel's founding, where a Chief Justice, Aaron Barak, this very left-wing guy, basically said, we've got the right to do anything. And nobody stopped him. And now they're saying, we want to keep that because this left-wing Supreme Court can hamstring Netanyahu and any right-wing government. It's also fueled by sort of communal tensions. People, sort of secular, sort of left-wing elites fear that the more religious, more right-wing nationalist voters who constitute now a majority in Israel you know, that they're afraid of them and they think that it'll take away their rights, which is nuts. They just want to be left alone. Religious people in Israel want to be left alone. They don't want to tell secular Jews in Tel Aviv what they can do on the Sabbath. But, you know, that's the fight here. And the elites have mobilized. They've taken to the streets. And they are, you know, they're going to tear the country apart. They're willing to sabotage the economy, sabotage the national defense in order to maintain, you know, their political power. You know, it's not unusual, people, when it comes to political power, whether you talk, whatever country you're talking about, people will do just about anything when the stakes are that high. And that's why they have really gambled with the future and security of their country. In order not so much to stop judicial reform, they want to get rid of Netanyahu. They want to ensure that the right cannot govern.
And, well, that's, yeah.
So that's the long-term battle there.
Yeah. No, not to interrupt, but I was going to say it's beyond just judicial reform. And now that they've seen that they could get Netanyahu to back down, what's the left's next step? What's their next plan? What's their next course of action? And when do you believe?
Well, listen, Israel's about to, you know, go on holiday for Passover. Next week is the Passover holiday.
Right.
You know, the Knesset recesses, you know, everybody, you know, all the demonstrators who've been treating it like it's another Woodstock, you know, they're going to take the week off like everybody else. But there's not going to be any compromise. They're going to keep pushing. They'll keep taking to the streets. This won't end until, you know, a new election is set, and, you know, this, you know, until they can topple Netanyahu. And it will be a measure of, you know, the sort of the mettle, the courage, he and, you know, Netanyahu's got plenty of guts, but, you know, there are plenty of people in his party who want to be popular and they don't like this. It's, you know, they wavered, whether they can hold on in the face of this kind of effort. Now, in the long run, you know, they may not get judicial reform this year. In fact, it's pretty much certain it won't happen this year. But eventually it's going to happen because, you know, the demography, you know, the left can't win an election in Israel anymore for lots of reasons. They were discredited by their foolish foreign policy of appeasement of the Palestinians and giving away territories, exchanging land for terror, not peace. And, you know, and they're also, you know, the sort of the nationalist parties are on the rise. So, you know, that's just the way it is. Sooner or later, they're going to lose. The question is, how much damage do they do before, you know, they acknowledge reality? And I can't tell you exactly how that's going to turn out. But right. The notion that a minority will permanently hold down a majority and do it in the name of democracy, no less. You know, it's you know, that's why the whole thing is kind of gaslighting. Yep. That can't go on forever. I mean, certainly Netanyahu is a lightning rod. You know, he's been in power for, you know, this is his sixth term as prime minister. He's been around forever. People are sick of him. A lot of people are sick of him, and they've demonized him. As much as his supporters, you know, he's a hero to them, you know, but, you know, in the end, you know, this can't go on forever. I mean, as much as it seems right now, as if, you know, like Israel's in the abyss. I mean, and it's the middle of, but let me sort of take it, the discussion, to a different place. I don't know exactly how it's going to shake down in Israel, but people certainly in the United States should be looking on at this with dismay, and that has nothing to do with, you know, their opinions, assuming anybody in America really has an opinion about the Israeli judiciary or whether they care about Netanyahu. This is a preview for what happens the next time the Republicans win the White House. You know?
Yeah. Oh, I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that one little bit. Yep.
You know, we saw a taste of it certainly in, you know, with the Russia collusion hoax and the mass rally against Netanyahu, against Trump,
the impeachments and everything else. Yep.
And, you know, but it's going to be much worse the next time.
I believe we're talking to Joe.
You know, I just to complete my sentence.
Yeah.
If you think that the chaos in the streets in Israel and the willingness of elites to sabotage the country in order to change the people, you know, in control of the government who just got elected is appalling. Just wait till it happens here, because it will.
Oh, I unfortunately don't doubt it one bit. We're talking to Jonathan Tobin, editor-in-chief at JNS.org, here on the Steve Malzberg Show. All right, let me read you a quote from U.S. Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat from Connecticut, who back around St. Patrick's Day was on CNN. And he said he believes the U.S. should condition aid to Israel based on the country's support for a two-state solution. He said, "I worry that we're at a moment in which we're watching a future Palestinian state be obliterated by the pace of settlements, by the legalization of outposts. And I think the United States needs to draw a harder line with this government. If we're going to continue to be in the business of supporting the Israeli government, they have to be in the continued business of a future Palestinian state. And that doesn't seem to be the policy of this government. So whether it's conditionally of aid to Israel, whether it's conditionally a visit to the United States, we've got to send a message that this assault on the two-state solution in particular is very bad for the U.S.-Israel relationship in the long run." Now, this is really sick, twisted stuff. The increase in violence and terror, the celebration of terror by the Palestinians, the martyrdom, everything has continued, everything's increased. And this creep and the creepy Democrats and Biden and all the people who surround him, this is their mindset. Two-state solution, talking about giving a state to a group of people who won't even come to the negotiating table, haven't for years, without preconditions. It's really scary, and American Jews will never wake up to this.
Well, you know, there are two things to unwrap there. Number one, what he said is factually nuts, because if you really cared about the two-state solution, the idea that, you know, an Israeli Jewish state and a Palestinian Arab state will live side by side in peace, if you care about that, the people to blame are the Palestinians, the Palestinian Authority, the so-called moderates, who have rejected, you know, numerous offers of a two-state solution in exchange for recognizing the legitimacy of a Jewish state next door. They won't do it. They won't recognize the legitimacy of a Jewish state, no matter where its borders are drawn. The Palestinians are committed to Israel's destruction. It's inextricably linked to their sense of national identity. That's a tragedy. I wish it weren't so. But, you know, the last 100 years of history shows us that it is. And Abbas and Hamas are united in this. So if you want a two-state solution, don't blame the Israelis, who have offered one numerous times. Blame the Palestinians, who have no interest in one. Now, but there's another thing to unwrap there. When you speak about Senator Chris Murphy, who is a very liberal Democrat, but he represents a sea change within the Democratic Party about attitudes towards Israel. And that was reflected in a very important poll that Gallup just came out with, that I wrote about in the New York Post and in JNS.org, in which for the first time, their annual tracking poll of attitudes towards Israel and the Palestinians showed that when you break it down by political affiliation, for the first time, the Democrats support the Palestinians.
Yes.
Against Israel. Yeah. By a 49-38% margin, Democrats are against Israel for the Palestinians, for the people that want to destroy Israel. While independents are overwhelmingly pro-Israel, and Republicans are, it's 78-11 in favor of Israel. That's a big, that's a huge thing, because the two parties over the last 60 years have done, basically exchanged identities. You know, back in the 60s, the Democrats were the pro-Israel party. The Republicans were mixed. Now the Republicans are a lockstep pro-Israel party. And the Democrats, their left wing, their intersectional left wing, influenced by critical race theory, which falsely deems Israel, a white colonialist state, when the majority of Israeli Jews are people of color, by the way, because they come from North Africa or the Middle East. Big lies, intersectional critical race theory lies, it fuels anti-Semitism, gives a permission slip for it. And they have the whip hand in the Democratic Party that, Joe Biden bends the knee to them and to Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar and the rest of the squad. The Democrats are now the danger to Israel and the United States. And, you know, it couldn't be more clear. Chris Murphy is just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. And Jonathan, you have to take into consideration, of course, that overwhelmingly Jews in this country are Democrats. So when Gallup polls, they're probably getting a good number of Jews in there as well. But even beyond that, polls have shown, and Donald Trump was called an anti-Semite for pointing this out by people like Jake Tapper and the rest of the skunks who I can't stomach, and the ADL and the rest of them. And you wrote a piece on the ADL and the people who claim that if you say George Soros, you're anti-Semitic. But Trump warned. He said American Jews better wake up and realize what they have in Israel. And the polls show that evangelical support for Israel is equivalent to what the Republican support you just mentioned, and mm-hmm. Democrat support, Jewish support is dropping. So that's another issue.
Yeah, unfortunately, the overwhelming majority of American Jews are liberal politically. They've come to identify their faith and their origins with a sort of social justice, political approach. It doesn't have to be in conflict with support for Israel, but it's being influenced by their left-wing allies, and they, many left-wing Jews are, falling away from Israel. It's a tragedy. The basis of Israel, of support for Israel now in the United States is in the Christian, and largely
evangelical
community, not exclusively. When you just take it across the board, most Americans are pro-Israel. Most Americans are not anti-Semitic. They're quite the contrary. They're philo-Semitic. Support for the idea of a Jewish state is baked deep into the political DNA of this country. It goes back to our origins. The first American president to endorse the idea of a Jewish state wasn't Harry Truman. It was John Adams. I have a lot of confidence in the American people and their good sense. At times it can be shaken, but I don't doubt that they're going to, the vast majority of them are going to stand by Israel. But in the Democratic Party, the intersectional left, as I said, holds the whip hand over the rest of the party, even the sort of sane parts of it. And they are, basically legitimizing anti-Semitism. And it constitutes a real danger, in part to Israel, but also to the American Jews who are blind to it.
Absolutely. Jonathan Tobin, great to talk to you, my friend. Have a great Passover, and we'll talk again.
Thanks very much, Steve. Thanks for having me on, and a happy Passover to you and to all of our listeners.
Thank you. Okay, Jonathan, take care. Jonathan Tobin, ladies and gentlemen, editor-in-chief. Check out jns.org. Love talking to Jonathan. But it's crazy. It's just insane. And, I watched the ADL came out with a poll on anti-Semitism, so statistics on anti-Semitism, and they went through the whole thing, and the head of the ADL was on CNN, and he mentioned Trump, he mentioned Marjorie Taylor Greene or whatever, blah 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 blah, never mentioned, and he talked about Jews who are Orthodox Jews who dress as Orthodox Jews in the streets of New York getting attacked, never mentioned the videos I've always seen. Shows it's minority people attacking these Jews in Brooklyn, New York. Never mentioned Kyrie Irving, never mentioned Kanye West, never mentioned what I just said about who's attacking the Jews in New York. Nope, it's Trump, it's MAGA, whatever. It's just so sickening. That's why I would never give a dime, not a dime, to the ADL. All right, folks, I appreciate you being out there. We're going to continue. Steve Malzberg right here on TNT Radio.
Jesse Zerwell on TNT Radio.
Gulf willingness to restore relations with Syria has increased over the past year and accelerated further following February's devastating earthquake, which struck both Syria and Turkey.
Let's give them the benefit of the doubt, even though, again, the idea that, the UAE and Saudi Arabia, out of their goodness of their own heart, since Syria had this devastating earthquake, they maybe started initiating rehabilitating Syria and bringing it back into the fold. But I'm pretty sure there are a lot of people who are dedicated to fighting for something that has now been abandoned by the Syrian government, if they're going to embrace, along with Iran, embrace the very regime that were part and parcel responsible for over the last 50 years of death and destruction in Palestine, in Lebanon, Syria, Iraq. And of course, Yemen, which is an ongoing war, which no one wishes to talk about.
Jesse Zerowell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
In the past, people thought if you had a mental health problem, you would never feel better. You might meet people who still feel this. Maybe you feel this way about yourself. Mental health is just like physical health. Everybody has it and needs to look after it. If your feelings, thoughts, and reactions are getting in the way of how you want to live, if you feel things aren't right, if you feel like you need help, you can ask for it. We're not going to pretend it's easy. Mental health problems can change your life, and for some, they can be overwhelming. But that's why Mind is here. We're going to face it with you. We'll listen, give support, and fight your corner. To find out more, visit mind.org.uk.
A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
This is the Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, welcome back. I just want to give you an update on what's going on with the shooting at the Nashville school. I saw an interview with the police chief on CNN earlier today, and we're talking about well over 48 hours after the shooting. And we were told right at the beginning that the trans shooter left a manifesto in the car along with maps. We've heard details about the maps. We've heard details that her first target might not have been the school, but might have been another place, possibly the church. But she opted for the school possibly because it was a softer target security-wise. So we've gotten detail. We know how many weapons she had purchased, when, blah, blah. But you know what we don't know? You know what we haven't been told about? What's in the manifesto? What's in the manifesto? So what did the police chief say today? And I'm paraphrasing, but I'm pretty much on target. Well, we're in the process of, trying to figure out a motive, looking through the manifesto. Really? You're in the process? 2 days later? So they asked him, how many pages is this manifesto? It's a notebook. It's a notebook, which leads me to believe it's handwritten. And he said, I don't know, maybe about 60 pages. Really? So you couldn't have gone, not you. The FBI is there, supposedly. Everybody's there. And nobody, between all of you, you couldn't go through 60 pages. You couldn't release it to the public. You can't tell us what was in it. You have no idea what her motivation was. Please, please. And by the way, please. So I'm reading a Newsweek story here. While many details remain to be unveiled about the massacre at the Covenant School this week. Let's see. They talk about the manifesto. Groups advocating for LGBTQ plus disagree with what I'm saying and others have said. They don't think the manifesto should be released. Gee, really? That's kind of like white supremacists saying, we don't believe you should let anybody know what, you know, let's say the white supremacist went into a black church, God forbid, and shot it up and left a manifesto. That's like the, you know, the Klan saying, we don't think it's in the interest of the American public to release the manifesto. Oh, really? That's nice. So here's what it should not be published. Jordan Budd, the executive director of Children of Lesbians and Gays Everywhere, told Newsweek, the focus should be on how this was able to happen in the first place. There should not be such easy access to deadly weaponry. Oh, you are a genius. Who would have thought you'd say something like that? Charles Moron, the national president of the Log Cabin Republicans, a Republican organization that advocates for LGBTQ plus Americans, also told Newsweek that there are serious consequences, quote unquote, for the public release of the manifesto. While it would certainly give insight into the motivations of this deeply troubled individual that could help shed light into root causes, We know from tragedies like this that additional glorification of the shooter could inspire others to take similar violent acts for attention. Oh, so it's like we haven't said her name 60,000 times. They haven't been covering this day and night, wall to wall, 24/7. So if we tell now why, for instance, she hated Christians, that would inspire others? What do you mean? Other trans people? Other gay people? What are you concerned about, Mr. Moron? I mean, Moran. Laura McGinnis, a spokesperson for PFLAG. I don't know. It doesn't even say what it is. PFLAG. I don't know. Agreed, telling Newsweek that publication of these documents could increase the risk of contagion. Am I pronouncing that right? She said that while the manifesto could help law enforcement and policymakers identify potential warning signs to prevent future tragedies, ultimately, quote, the contents don't change the outcome of the tragedy. Regardless of the shooter's intentions, the real issue here is the easy access to deadly weapons in Tennessee and elsewhere. Oh, did you just come up with that on your own? Or did you consult with the moron and Jordan Budd, whose statements I read prior? Wow. So the LGBTQ organizational leaders don't want this out. Isn't that something? And guess what? I'll bet you dollars to donuts. And by the way, I don't know what that means. But I'll bet you, I don't, but I'll bet you dollars to donuts that we don't see the manifesto. Because you can't buck. I said buck with a B. You can't buck the LGBTQ trans lobby. Now, can you? That wouldn't be nice. What a joke. And by the way, a spokesman for the Metropolitan Nashville Police Department told the Daily Caller News Foundation that it had no intention of releasing the documents anytime soon, saying we will not be releasing the manifesto during an open investigation. Well, obviously, it's not an open investigation in that sense. It might be an ongoing investigation, but the person's dead. They're not going to stand trial. Why not educate the public? Why not have transparency? Do you think if this were a case of, by the way, they haven't even called this a hate crime. They actually sit there and say, I see it on CNN every hour. They still don't have a motive. Really? They still don't. My ass. They still don't have a motive. Are you kidding? Wow. 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 By the way, the school, social media users also argued against the release of the manifesto. So yesterday's school shooter has a manifesto. My manifesto is don't publish it. One Twitter user wrote on Tuesday, F-E-C-K, whatever that means, whatever gender that S bird was, I still haven't figured out if we're talking, whatever. I don't know why I'm reading that. I thought it was something better. Anyway, so there you go. There you go. And when Joe Biden, crazy old sick, twisted Joe Biden is asked, do you believe Christians were targeted? He says, I don't know. And then when he was told that Josh Hawley, the Republican senator said they were, he says, oh, well, then I guess I don't. And they says, I'm only joking about this. And how could Christians not have been targeted? I'm Jewish. How could Christians not have been targeted? Are you kidding me? It's sickening. It's outrageous. I got to tell you, folks, we are really in trouble. Really in trouble. I'll tell you something else. I was going to play it tomorrow, possibly, but tomorrow we got Roger Stone, by the way. Roger Stone. And then if you like baseball, we got a treat on Friday. So I'll just say that as well. Usually don't have a guest. Tomorrow's opening day. Friday, we got a treat with a Yankee connection. All right. Remember what? Yeah, I don't know if you remember, but I played you sound bites about a month ago or 3 weeks ago when the Attorney General of the United States, Merrick Garland, was questioned by Ted Cruz. And it was about why people were not arrested for protesting in front of the homes of the Supreme Court justices, the conservative justices, after the leak of the decision on Roe. And it's against the law to protest in front of the homes of judges, and nobody was arrested. And so he went at it, Cruz, with the Attorney General, and said, you know, and the Attorney General tried to get a word in edgewise. And what he wound up saying was, that the federal marshals were there, and they make the decision when to arrest somebody. Aha. The Attorney General was testifying today before another committee, this time, I believe, a House committee. And guess what they came up with? They came up with information, the committee, that showed that these federal marshals who were at the protests guarding the homes of the Supreme Court justices were told not to make any arrests unless absolutely necessary. In other words, the illegality of doing the protests, that wasn't going to motivate an arrest. There had to be something like egregious, I guess, the way they arrested the guy who was going to kill Brett Kavanaugh, you know, showing up with all the weapons and everything at his house. Now, they asked the Attorney General, because this was a Justice Department, circulating in the Justice Department, this memo. And they asked, he says, this is the first time I've ever seen this. If that's true, we're screwed. If it's not true, he committed perjury and we're still screwed. So either way, we're screwed. You following me? If the Attorney General of the United States didn't know that his own Justice Department was giving orders to the marshals not to make any arrests of those protesters who were there illegally, in front of the homes of Supreme Court justices, and then he testifies under oath that it was up to the marshals, and all along the marshals have been told don't make arrests, and he either knew and lied under oath or didn't know. You tell me which is worse. Either way, we're screwed. That's how messed up everything is. That's how, and by the way, the update on the Trump grand jury, they're taking a month off. Now, this isn't them who decide this. They've been told to take a month off. I think they're showing up tomorrow, but they're not going to do anything, so I don't know why they make them come in. But this is going away for a month, at least. Isn't that lovely? That's where we are. So all this that I just told you about or have talked about will be fodder for Roger Stone tomorrow, I am sure, in addition to many other things. You know, I'm sitting here with about 20 sound bites. I want you to hear all of them, and you're going to get to hear very, 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 very few of them because I'm talking. But it's important that I tell you what I'm telling you. And the sound bites, you know, the sound bites we could always do. And if they get old, I just trash them. You know, if I don't get to them and they get old, I trash them. So we do have time here before the break for a few. So let me let you hear. This is Alejandro Mayorkas, the Homeland Security Secretary of the United States. And here he is talking to Senator John Kennedy. Now, you may remember him from something else, and I'll remind you in a second. Here he's asking him about the Second Amendment and assault weapons in the wake of the shooting. You know, ban assault weapons. So listen to this and how revealing it is. This is cut 350.
What is an assault weapon?
It is, for example, an AK-47.
Can you give me a definition other than just pointing to a specific weapon? Would there be other weapons besides an AK-47 you would ban?
Very well are. And I remember when I was a federal prosecutor in the Central District of California from September 25th, 1989 to, I believe it was April 2001.
And I thank you for your service,
the vast majority of law enforcement officers, leaders with whom I worked were greatly in support of the assault weapons
Mr.
ban.
Chairman, you know why we get so frustrated with you? Because you won't give straight answers.
I think I just did.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't.
He's telling us the dates that he was a whatever position he was in. Who cares? Who cares? So, Senator Kennedy asks again of this worthless bureaucratic who's in charge of our homeland security, believe it or not. Here's cut 351.
Do you have a definition of an assault weapon?
I am confident there is a technical definition of what is an assault weapon, and it was assuredly used in the context of the statute that previously existed banning assault weapons.
I mean, are you kidding? Yeah, but I don't know it. No, I'm sure there is a definition, and I'm sure it was used when we banned assault weapons 20 years ago. I'm sure there was a definition. But you're head of Homeland Security. You said you favor banning assault weapons. What's an assault weapon? I don't know, but I'm sure somebody knows. You believe this? The incompetence. Well, Kennedy's great at doing this because Kennedy, there was a federal judicial nominee by Biden about a couple of weeks ago. I think I played this for you. Maybe not. His name is Cato Cruz. So Kennedy, you know, you want to be on the federal bench. Kennedy's going to ask you some questions here. And he did. Here's 313.
Tell me how you analyze a Brady motion.
How I analyze a Brady motion?
Yes.
Senator, in my 4.5 years on the bench, I don't believe I've had the occasion to address a Brady motion in my career.
Do you know what a Brady motion is?
Senator, in my time on the bench, I've not had occasion to address that, and so it's not coming to mind at the moment what a Brady motion is.
Do you recall the U.S. Supreme Court case, Brady v. Maryland?
I do recall the name of the case, Senator.
Ouch.
But I don't know what the... Brady, was that when Marsha wanted to go to the prom, but her sister... stole her boyfriend, and then Greg and Peter came to Marsha's defense and they all got in trouble and were grounded by their parents. Is that what the Brady law is? I mean, you might as well have guessed that since you have no freaking clue. Now, the Brady law, from what I'm told, is common. It's so common. It's that the defense has a right to obtain evidence that would be advantageous for their client. That's what they're talking about. How could you be nominated to the federal bench and not know that? Well, here's 314.
This is the second time this year that Kennedy has stumped a Biden judicial nominee during confirmation hearings. 2 months ago, he questioned Spokane County Superior Court Judge Charnel Bjelkengren, who was nominated to be a district court judge in Washington state.
Tell me what Article 5 of the Constitution does.
Article 5 is not coming to mind at the moment.
Okay. How about Article 2?
Neither is Article 2.
That was Dan Abrams, by the way, from News Nation, with those sound bites and that little commentary there. You believe this? Do you believe this? Oh my God, are we screwed? Are we screwed? Judges don't know the law. Mayorkas doesn't know what an assault weapon definition is. Nobody knows anything. Our attorney general didn't know that marshals were told not to make arrests, he claims. What is it? What is it? And when we come back, I got one more. And thank goodness this person withdrew his nomination from the position he was nominated for. I'll tell you who it is, what it was, and you'll get to hear a little montage of him. Again, clueless, just clueless. But he is black, and so was that one of those judges, a woman of color as well. And so it was Cato Cruz, a man of a minority. And I believe Alejandro Mayorkas could be qualified as a minority as well. So there you go. That's all that counts, as we've seen from Karine Jean-Pierre. All right, we're coming back. Steve Malzberg, one final segment left in the hour. It flew by for me on TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
We may have a big breakthrough here because a utility company in the United States, and a prominent one, says net zero may not be reliable. Dominion Energy, which is a Virginia utility, has admitted that net zero may not work. Now, they operate under the Net Zero Virginia Clean Economy Act, and for a while now, that's been going on. And it requires Dominion to shut down all gas, oil, and coal-fired power by 2045. These people have any idea, on a national level, just in the United States alone, we're not talking Europe and we're not talking Australia, that's a $300 trillion bill for something that's unreliable. And it appears that the Virginia Clean Economy Act, I love the way they do this stuff, they name it these things and it has nothing to do with what it really is, cannot be done. Now, Dominion has said in their new integrated resource plan that it might not be able to be done. Isn't that interesting? This is TNT climate and weather watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought all the people that I knew who didn't drink were self-righteous people, holier than thou. So it never occurred to me that Alcoholics Anonymous was filled with people who had drank like I did, and now were the same people that I used to drink with. The same people that I liked, only now they weren't drinking. They were people just like me who had been drinking for a long time and found out that it didn't work for them anymore.
Visit AA.org for more information and download the Meeting Guide app to find a meeting near you.
You're listening to the Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, folks, welcome back. So you just heard the incompetent Mayorkas. You just heard two incompetent judicial nominees. And I told you about and played you some of the bites you're going to hear. I just made a montage of it, a short montage of it. But it's newsworthy because a couple of days ago, Philip Washington withdrew his nomination to be the head of the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration. At the Senate hearing, he was questioned by, among others, Senator Todd Budd, Republican, and he couldn't answer a thing. So let me refresh your memory on that. Here's cut 325.
What airspace requires an ADS-B transponder? Quickly, please.
Thank you for the question, Senator. Not sure I can answer that question right now.
That's okay. We'll just keep going. So what are the six types of special use airspace that protect this national security that appear on FAA charts? Quickly, please.
Sorry, Senator, I cannot answer that question.
So what are the operational limitations of a pilot flying under basic med?
Well, thank you for the question, Senator. I'm not a pilot, so...
But obviously, you'd never see the Federal Aviation Administration, so any idea what those restrictions are under basic med, quickly?
Well, some of the restrictions, I think, would be high blood pressure. Some of them would be...
It's more like how many passengers per airplane, how many pounds in different categories, and what altitude you can fly under, so... And then... amount of knots. It's under 250 knots. So it's not having anything to do with blood pressure. Can you tell me what causes an aircraft to spin or to stall?
Again, Senator, I'm not a pilot.
So can you tell me what the minimum separation distance is for landing and departing airliners during the daytime, Mr. Washington?
I don't want to guess on that, Senator.
Unmanned, like drones? Are you familiar with the difference?
Yes.
Okay. You know the difference between those two, Part 44809 and Part 107? Do you know the difference there?
No, I cannot.
This man was nominated and supported and backed by Joe Biden. Not that he even knows who the guy is, but this is who they wanted to run the FAA. A guy who can't answer any of those questions. So Even though Democrats have a majority, Democrats and non-affiliated, a couple, at least one independent, like Kristen Sinema, are on the committee, and he had to be voted out of the committee, and then the vote would go to the full Senate. Well, he didn't have the votes on the full, on the committee, because Republicans and one Democrat and Kristen Sinema reportedly were like, I don't think so. So he withdrew his nomination. But why was he nominated? You got to figure because he was black. And so Karine Jean-Pierre could stand there and say, yes, we've appointed another minority, and here's the score. You know, blacks, blah, blah. Black women, blah, blah. You know, blah, blah is a number. Black trans women, black trans men. And then the dreaded white men number. That's the only thing you could figure. I want you to hear Barry Black. Barry Black is the Senate chaplain. The Senate chaplain. CNN's Caitlin Collins played this, and then she weighed in and asked a question to Earl Lewis, a New York journalist who's a CNN person as well. This is in the aftermath of the shooting in Nashville. Get a load of this. This is cut 359.
This is a really rare statement to hear from him. This is what he said about what happened in Nashville.
Lord, when babies die at a church school, it is time for us to move beyond thoughts and prayers. Lord, deliver our senators from the paralysis of analysis that waits for the miraculous.
The paralysis of analysis that waits for the miraculous.
That's my kind of preacher, you know, make you a little uncomfortable sitting there on a Sunday morning.
That does not happen very often.
Doesn't happen very often. And, you know, it's interesting if you think about it. I don't know who names or can remove the Senate chaplain, but I suspect if there were a different majority leader, his job might be in danger right now. This is something that, you know, you wish more clergy would do, which is take a chance, speak your truth, try and get people to feel a little uncomfortable and to take action.
Really? You wish more clergy would speak out politically from the pulpit, or in this case, from the floor of the Senate? The paralysis of the analysis, I felt like I was listening to Jesse Jackson. I mean, wow. Here's Gayle King, who's about reportedly to announce that she's going to be hosting a late night, a primetime show on CNN, in addition to CBS This Morning, talking about guns. What else? Here's cut 360.
I've come to the point, and it's very difficult to even think that we live in a country where apparently we value guns over children. We value guns over the lives of fellow human beings. And it's very hard for me to wrap my brain around that. No, because if we didn't feel that way, we would do something about it.
I just think I take my kids to the playground in New York, and they put padding on the playground just in case they fall off the jungle gym. They don't want to get a bruise on your elbow. Think of the steps we take to ensure that our kids are safe, except around this one issue where we seem to have a block.
Guys, they're banning books in schools. Yeah. Books can't kill your children. They're banning some books in schools, but yet the rules are very different when it comes to guns. And it's just, we never want to take guns away from responsible owners.
Right.
That's not what we're trying to do here.
Right.
But assault rifles have no business in this society.
Okay, well, millions of responsible owners own assault weapons, quote unquote, assault weapons. And when it comes to putting padding on the playground, you know, floor or beneath the monkey bars and all that, so kids don't get hurt, and the length we go to protect our kids, you're never going to take the weapons out of the hands of the bad guy, no matter what Congress says. So lock up the schools. Lock them up, put security, put guns in the schools in the hands of the good guys. Oh, no, that's creating a prison for our children. We can't do that. Oh, so you're relying on criminals who are willing to die to shoot up a school to say, oh, that's it. Joe Biden just signed the bill. I guess I can't do it anymore. What? Oh, please. What that pastor should have been praying for what Barry Black, the Senate chaplain, should have been praying for was, oh, please, please, God, give our politicians and our people in charge some freaking brains. Ugh. Oh, my goodness. All right, folks, it's been a pleasure. I hope you enjoyed it. Tell your friends. If you missed any of it, of course, you could go to the TNT site and get the podcast and spread it around. Spread the podcast around to your friends and your enemies, by the way. And tomorrow, God willing, same time, same place with Roger Stone, right here on TNT Radio.